This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sanim. As you have just witnessed, we have heard from three MPs, from Zuraida, Isna Raisa, as well as Yeo Bee-in. The tone is absolutely remarkable because YB Zuraida is towing the line by the DG of Health, saying that it's a Delta variant, saying that this was not supposed to take place in the first place, that the MPs have met on the 26th of July, agreeing that if a case were to be an outbreak, then we have to postpone or suspend the parliamentary special briefing session. But the following two MPs is basically more of the need for the parliamentary sitting to take place. In fact, there's some comparisons into why other countries around the world can have their parliamentary sitting, except for Malaysia. What makes Malaysia something special? That is yet to be answered by some of the members of the parliamentarians. So in the next few hours, we are going to unpack some of the conversations that has taken place just now, as well as what has taken place earlier today, so that we can try to understand what's happening for the week to come. Later on, we will have Raja Ahmad Iskandar Faris, the communications director of REFSA. He'll be joining us very shortly. But for now, the key player that we need to look at is, of course, UMNO. UMNO Supreme Council will be calling a special meeting tomorrow as political pressures continue to mount on the administration of the Prime Minister. And among the topics that will be discussed will be regarding the palace's rebuke of the government that happened on July 29th. This was mentioned by the UMNO Secretary General, Ahmad Maslan. And through his Twitter posting, Ahmad Maslan said that the online meeting will also discuss the issue of emergency ordinances, as well as the postponement of the Dewan Rakyat sitting that was scheduled earlier today. UMNO itself is believed to be experiencing internal tensions with Vice President Ismail Sabri Yaakob, who is also the Deputy Prime Minister, versus that of the president of UMNO, which is Datuk Seri Ahmad Zahid Hamidi. And it is pulling in very polar opposite directions to a point where there could be some factions in terms of UMNO cabinet members might be having different thoughts from UMNO backbenchers. And because of this split, we're going to see some ideas of how UMNO is going to decide with one voice, if it's possible, following the UMNO Supreme Council meeting. Now, to recap, UMNO as a body has said that they no longer support the administration. That statement was issued by the president of the party, Datuk Seri Ahmad Zahid Hamidi. However, as we have all become accustomed to, and all of us are aware of already for the past few days, Barisan Nasional MPs, in this sense comprising nearly everyone of UMNO MPs, have reaffirmed their position of supporting the Prime Minister. So as you can see, we are not too sure where UMNO stands when it comes to the official standing of the party. One is going the other way, another one is going the opposite way. This is, of course, going to create a lot of conversations in the week to come when it comes to how the continued support of the administration of the Prime Minister is going to be garnered. On top of that, of course, the big element that we have to discuss is the opposition members. Because earlier today, as we discussed during this time yesterday, opposition members did gather at Merdeka Square, calling for the opening of the parliament and the resignation of the Prime Minister, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin. The protest, of course, was following the government's decision to cancel the final day of the Dewan Rakyat's five-day special sitting, which has been postponed indefinitely because of this COVID. But we know that they're going to try to reconvene 2 weeks from now. That's what we heard. But a definite date has not been set. We have something here for you to look at.
Among MPs present were opposition leader Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim and former Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, alongside a dozen of lawmakers from the opposition bloc. Anwar reiterated his call for the Prime Minister to resign, claiming that the ruling government has collapsed. The group tried to march towards the parliament but were denied entry by police.
We'll go for a short break. When we come back, we'll have a chat with Raja Iskandar of Refsa. Welcome back. This is Notepad. We're doing this live. Joining us is Raja Ahmad Iskandar Faris, the Communications Director of Refsa. Iskandar, thanks for gracing this show yet again. It's unbelievable that the last week, over the past 7 days that we have last spoken, a lot has happened, and that is by a mile an understatement. What's your take on the ongoings of the country right now?
Well, Ibrahim, thank you for having me yet again. What we have last week, I think a lot of Malaysia shifted from watching streaming services to our local production, which is the Parliament. And things seems to take a hit. We didn't expect in 4 days a lot of drama can be extracted from the session. But yeah, I think we'll discuss a bit more after the clip.
All right, yeah. So the clip that you're referring to is, of course, the opposition leader, Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim, because he claimed today that the Prime Minister has lost the majority of support in Parliament. As the Parliament remains suspended, Datuk Sri Anwar claimed that the Perikatan Nasional Government has indeed fallen after MPs withdrew their support from Muhyiddin's administration. He says that there's a lot of things happening, but of course the most important thing is over 107 MPs were with him at the Dataran, signalling that he now has the majority. Here he is talking about not just about the majority, but on the concept of what just happened, which is the fall of democracy. Let's hear the clip.
Belum pernah berlaku dalam sejarah pelanggaran hukum sedemikian rupa oleh Perdana Menteri dan Kabinetnya. Penghinaan kepada institusi raja, dan ini yang menyebabkan kita berhimpun pada hari ini.
Yeah, so Iskandar, to recap, right, he says membelakangi rakyat, membelakangi undang-undang, membelakangi parlimen, derhaka kepada Yang di-Pertuan Agong. These are very strong statements. Do you see any basis in Datuk Sri Anwar making such a statement?
Well, we seem to be on a roll on the unprecedented events happening to Malaysia. But first, let me put things into context. What we see today is history repeating itself. PN is actually taking a leaf out of PN's authoritarian playbook. Last time in 2015, we see Parliament being locked up from the opposition members when they wanted to discuss about 1MDB. Now, today, we see them being locked out of Parliament to go into sitting and ask the necessary questions. So this is because the PM himself sees the writing on the wall. PN is currently operating in such a way that they believe that they are on their last legs, and they won't hesitate to use whatever means necessary. This means any arrays of state apparatus, government levers to stay in power. This includes shutting down democracy. So going back to your question, on Friday, this follows a three announcement of postponement that led to then the inevitable suspension of session for today. So we refer to the statement of YDPA and also the letter that leaked to the public. So two things are clear. The government has tried to pull a wool on everyone's eyes with regards to the emergency ordinance revocation. And number two, they have failed to carry out the task requested by the Yang di-Pertuan Agong, which is to discuss the emergency ordinance in Parliament. So I can agree with the statement that this is unprecedented, and the government is trying to do its very best to stay in power in whatever means necessary.
Do you think that the government is still under pressure? Do you think that they've got it under control? What's your opinion on this?
They definitely hasn't gotten it under control. They are currently operating on a survival mode from one day to the other. I don't see that they have any long-term plan. Even the after the royal rebuke, following the strongly worded statement by the palace, they were still combative in their response, trying to, in Malay, they were called menegakkan benar yang basah. They still tried to defend their position, even whatever other legal experts may say. So we can see that they are trying their level best to stay in power, using whatever means necessary.
You know what I find interesting today? I find that the solidarity amongst the opposition MPs was seen. This was the first time that Tun Mahathir stood side by side Datuk Sri Shafie Abdal, Anwar Ibrahim, Dr. Zul, Lim Guan Eng, and of course even Syed Saddiq, who for the longest of time has been distancing himself from these guys. And yes, it is guys. Do you see that this is something of a show of strength, or is there something more deeper, more meaningful in terms of the many opposition parties banded together? Do you think that there's something substantial to this, or this is merely a show of force, just to show that 107 MPs are indeed turning up today?
Rahim, so what happens today, I think, is a testament that hardship beggars solidarity. In the lead up to today, there has been many protests, namely Hartal Doctor Contract, and also hashtag Lawan, Keluar dan Lawan, and many other protests resulting from the failure of the government to manage COVID pandemic and also the other mismanagement. What follows the protests were heavy-handed response by the authorities, arresting, questioning them, and harassing them in different manners. So I think that gave a pretext or a strong enough cause for the opposition to band together today. They did stand together and strongly condemned the PN, even putting a motion of no confidence against Muhyiddin following the royal rebuke. So on the opposition side, I think it's clear that they are against Muhyiddin, but the one that we are not sure is, what about the other anti-Muhyiddin forces? What are they doing, and are they going to act on their words, or just merely hot air, not doing anything on their part?
Are you talking about UMNO now?
Yeah, so it's quite clear that I think for UMNO, the ball is now, everyone's focus is now on UMNO's next step. They have been pushing statements, threatening to pull out from the government, yet they are in an identity crisis. They are constantly criticizing the government, trying to distance themselves, but at the same time, reaping the benefits of being government. So the rakyat is where do they stand?
Yeah, I mean, actually, the rakyat knows. They stand on two paths right now. That's clear. The issue now is whether or not the rakyat needs to know whether they are still standing on two paths, or they can go on a path and stick to it. That's all that we need right now. We will go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss further with Iskandar of Refsa. Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad, your host Ibrahim Sani, live tonight, straight from my house into yours, or wherever you are supposed to be. I hope you're at your home. We have Iskandar of Refsa on the show. We'll bring him up very shortly. Right now, we've got a special report that we have with Dr. Farhan Rosli of the Selangor Task Force, because he says that even if the parliament was postponed because of political reasons, there are still some underlying issues or concerns that needs to be addressed with. Taking a closer look on this issue from a public health perspective, what are the indicators used in deciding whether or not parliament can convene safely in the future? Because it appears that the pandemic is here to stay. So here is Dr. Farhan on the issue.
When you shut down parliament, I do not care whether you shut it down for political reasons. Let that be the reason for you to state why it's closed. But the moment you use data and science as a guide to shut down parliament, it throws everything that we have done over the past 1.5 years in disarray. Because now you are going to make the public confused about what are the indicators for you to shut down a certain place, for you to cordon off a certain place. So I can give you 10 places right now where they have 12 to 14% positivity rate and it's still open. Now you tell me about the cases in the PPV. How come you're not shutting down the PPVs even though you have cases which is more than 1%? How come you're not shutting down all the vaccination centers? Do you see the big ramifications that occurs when you do this without using science and data accurately and properly? And now people are going to question every single thing that you announce after this. Is the data correct? Is the science correct? Are you sure that what you're saying is truth? And because of what you have done, you have broken down any sort of trust that the public has in the pandemic response.
Dr. Farhan also stressed the need for a national testing policy that will set a precedent on how the government can begin to open up the country.
Definitely, number one, you need to develop a national testing policy. You have to decide who are you going to test, when are you going to test, how many times are you going to test, and what tests are you going to be using to be acceptable for you to say that this is confirmed positive. And this is for items that must be detailed out and must be implemented on the whole national level. And you cannot be picking and choosing where you change the policy. Because when you do this, definitely you will never be able to exit the pandemic. The structure of what you are about to be doing does not shut down. And this is what we mean by opening up. And Parliament was the litmus test for us to see how we can actually operate normally at full capacity. And if we cannot even get this right with 222 people right, definitely we cannot even think about opening up any other sectors of the economy.
Yeah, so that was Dr. Farhan Rusli. He is an assistant professor at UIA, also the director of the Selangor Task Force. Joining us back is Iskandar Faris of REFSA. Iskandar, there are two big ideas that I want to explore with you following what Dr. Farhan was mentioning. The first is, of course, the erosion or the possible erosion of the national public trust with regard to the pandemic response. And the second is long-term solution, because if you can't get it right for 222 people, actually it's 220, two MPs have passed away and their seats have not yet been replaced. If you can't get it right for 220 people, how are you going to get it right for, you know, 36 million people or 32 million people? Let's go with the first one, Iskandar. Do you think that the public trust is going to be eroded when it comes to managing the COVID because of the issues surrounding the parliamentary sitting?
So, Ibrahim, I think there will be questions coming up from this, more questions than answers. It's unfortunate that data and facts have been used and massaged in a way to justify the locking down of parliament. Ultimately, this will dent the credibility and trust in MOH, especially as an institution. Why? Because this reinforced the double standards or do-or-die-jet perception that it currently has. As Dr. Farhan pointed out, recent cases in PPV, there were 204 workers tested positive, but only closure for it was only closed for one day for sanitization. Other places has COVID cases as well, but they only closed for 1 to 3 days. In Parliament, we detected 11 out of 1,183 cases of people tested positive. Then Health DG decides to close down for 2 weeks to do this assessment. So despite And also, despite his concerns, the DG was pictured attending the PAC committee proceedings today at Parliament. So people will ask, why are the double standards? And this doesn't help that the timing coincides with what was supposed to be a royal rebuke of the law minister last week. So the timing is just nice for them to avoid any questions or any consequences from that revelation. So I don't see how the government can steer away from that kind of perception. And this raises more questions in the future. What kind of, because the government is quite familiar or quite linked to shifting the goalposts, how can we guarantee that special parliament sitting, although they say can continue in 2 weeks, will be allowed to go on? And what about the parliamentary session in September? Will this still be on if they decide to? So these are the different questions that can come up because of the flimsy excuse that they have given to close down parliament based on the supposed facts and data that they cited.
Yeah, just to recap, there are two big dates that we've got to think about when it comes to the parliamentary sitting for this year. Late October, which is the budget or the Belanjawan sitting presentation, as well as September, the presentation of the 12th Malaysia Plan. Other than these two highlights, there aren't any other dates that was signposted to be had when it comes to the parliamentary sitting. Technically, the government does not need to have a parliamentary sitting other than these two dates. Do you think that that is the issue here? Because, you know, we don't even have a definite date for the reopening of the parliamentary sitting for this round. When do you think the parliament is going to open?
The honest answer will be when they are comfortable enough to face parliamentarians. What we have now, because of the postponement, is a denied opportunity to scrutinize the pandemic management approach, the lockdowns, the national recovery plan, and in the longer term, if we still postpone the parliament, maybe the budget will be tabled later, 12th Malaysia Plan might not be tabled this year. So there are many implications from this, I would say, undemocratic suspension of parliament. And we also have this matter of the emergency ordinance hanging above our heads because of the because the revocation didn't happen, and the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong confirmed this. It's still in effect till February 2022. So delaying the parliament session, even though because the parliament session is up to the prerogative of the PM, he can call the parliament when he wants. Delaying them would do no justice to the rakyat. The rakyat suffers, and in the wider whole, Malaysia, the economy overall suffers.
Of course, REFSA is the Research for Social Advancement. You're looking at policy, and you're looking at blueprints that is done both at the legislative aspect, but also at the governmental aspect or the governance aspect. Because of the parliamentary sitting being suspended, there's not much items that can be scrutinized when it comes to policy, be it healthcare policy or the economic policy or any other policy for that matter, because there's no parliamentary sitting. Does this provide some sort of a gridlock for you when it comes to the advancement of Malaysia right now?
I think it's not just for us. Many other think tanks and many stakeholders are basically awaiting for parliament. What we have now is the prolonging of an undemocratic rule. Before this, we have emergency rule for a few months since January that ended just today, the day before today, yesterday. And now we are in a state of limbo. We don't know what's going to happen. And in fact, the emergency ordinance are still going to be in effect. So we have semblance of the emergency still with us. It's quite frustrating in a way to keep saying the same thing, but no no positive response given by the government. I'm sure many other think tanks, intellectuals, researchers feel the same way. Some of the proposals that we have put out are not new. We've been talking about it since earlier this year. So it's frustrating to see that the government fails to acknowledge that and to take other points of views into the picture to combat this pandemic together. I believe if they are humble enough and willing to admit that some of the measures that they've taken are not effective, not efficient enough to combat this pandemic and save livelihoods, they can do better to incorporate other ideas and implement them.
Thank you. That was Raja Ahmad Iskandar Faris, the Communications Director at REFSA. This was Notepad. Stay safe. Stay tuned to Astro Awani. It's going to be a busy week for the rest of us here today. Until then, thanks very much for watching. I am Ibrahim Sani.